KALW.
I feel like the temple is the one place at Burning Man that is what I consider sacred.
Burning Man is virtual this year with an appropriate theme, the multiverse. We're going to bring you into that world all today by taking you inside its spiritual center.
However you name God or your higher power or no God at all, pray that you are met with a great mystery that touches you exactly where you need to be.
We'll show you how the temple came to be and the deep emotion it stirs in its visitors.
But here in this temple, it doesn't feel empty. It feels alive. And our hope is that as we come here throughout the week, we'll feel him here.
This week, we're running all new episodes of The Intersection at Burning Man. And today, we'll take you to the temple. That's coming up. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. This week, if things were going according to schedule, some 80,000 people would have been experiencing an alternate universe at Burning Man. Of course, things aren't normal, so we're taking you there through the sounds and scenes of last year's event so we can all see and hear what we're missing. Deep in the Black Rock Desert, way beyond the theme camps and the man that gives the event its name, there's another elaborate wooden structure. It blends art and architecture, inside and out. And arguably, it's the sacred and spiritual center of Burning Man. Burners simply call it the temple. Grief is probably the most apparent emotion expressed and experienced here. That specific grief that comes with losing a loved one, and the more diffuse grief that can come with simply being alive on this planet in this moment. If ever we needed a place to grieve, it's now. A pandemic rages, much of the state is on fire, we're once again confronting the injustices faced by Black Americans. Instead of communing in Black Rock City and contemplating at the temple, we have to settle for digital approximations of both this year, at home and in private. But it begs the question, why do burners have such a strong attachment to a temporary structure that's little more than wood and nails? From the Nevada desert and last year's Burning Man, Jonathan Davis has that story.
It's now Sunday morning. The gates to Burning Man officially opened at midnight. Burners have been building for weeks and preparing for months, all for this one temporary week ahead of us. I head out on my beach cruiser and bike into the open desert, headed for the temple, uncertain if it's actually open yet. As I exit the city, I pass the Esplanade, the perimeter that marks the beginning of the city grid and home to some of the biggest and loudest camps at Burning Man. I keep riding and I can now see the speck of a temple out in the distance. I pass the man, who towers at 6 stories tall and will be burned down in a week. I bike deeper and deeper, passing all sorts of interesting and intricate art, but I stay focused on the distant structure rising from the dust. The massive line of torii, growing to a high peak at the center, creates a profile like the Golden Gate Bridge. I finally reach the temple. People are around. In fact, it appears the temple's been open for hours. I park my bike, take a deep breath, and walk in.
I'm at the temple right now. Already the walls are covered in the names of those who have been lost, and pictures and collages and poems, memorials to those who have passed, to those things that people are grieving. People are supporting others, helping them put up and place their art. It's very somber, very quiet. Bass rolls in the background from the city, but this place is something different.
Burners are transforming the space from a mere wooden building to something more. As visitors attach their memorials to the wooden torii with staple guns, others write their messages directly onto them with permanent markers. Some folks just quietly read and contemplate. I'm still at Burning Man, but the vibe inside here is as if I'm somewhere else entirely. I have some major trepidation just being in the temple. though I suppose I look like a burner wearing a denim vest and a tie-dye sarong. I'm also walking around with a big furry microphone and headphones in my ears. The sanctity of the temple is palpable, and the temple guardians keep their eyes on me, especially as they see me approach someone. She's a young woman with blonde hair, sitting in between two Tories, writing on a piece of paper. She notices me, and I introduce myself. Her name is Jamie Davies, and she's from Australia. I ask her why she came to the temple.
So, I'm here for mainly my grandma. She's like really sick at home at the moment. She's got a brain tumor, and I like haven't lost her, which I'm really happy about, but I've lost a part of her.
Jamie's writing her a letter to leave in the temple. I ask if she feels open to sharing it with me. She does.
There were so many things I wanted to say to you before I left, but I couldn't bring myself to say them. I wanted to tell you how much I'm going to miss you when you leave, and how there will always be an empty spot in my heart that nobody can ever replace. I wanted to tell you not to leave us, but I don't want you to be suffering. So if you decide to go, I wish you happiness and bliss and serenity wherever you go from here.
Jamie says her grandma would have loved the playa.
I mean, she's never been to Burning Man, but she's like a burner. And she taught me everything that I believe in, which is what got me here. Like, everything from just, like, having an open mind to, like, being generous to, like, loving everyone else. So I'm just here to, like, keep her spirit going, but, like, acknowledge the loss that I've experienced.
Jamie's story feels very resonant for me. As I walk around the temple, I find that many are here to recognize all sorts of personal losses, transitions, triumphs, and often they want to have their stories heard. There wasn't always a temple at Burning Man. Back in 1986, when the very first man was burned, the event was a tiny and nameless summer solstice gathering. 20 free-spirited friends came together on San Francisco's Baker Beach. They built an 8-foot-tall wooden man effigy and set it on fire. By 1990, the event had come to be known as Burning Man, and its growth had already forced it to move from Baker Beach to Nevada's Black Rock Desert. By 2000, the man stands 4 stories tall, and 25,000 people have come to watch it burn. This little underground event of art and anarchy has turned into a full-on, temporary, autonomous city. And as a city's hierarchy of needs evolves, so does its infrastructure.
In our community, we had porta-potties, and we had kitchens, and we had center camp, and we had a man, and we had the police and fire and safety. We didn't have a temple. And a temple serves a different purpose than a man.
David Best remembers needing a space for reflection. And out of that need, the temple emerged.
How the temple started is maybe 20 years ago. I can't remember the years or dates. I was working, getting ready to go to Burning Man. We were going to unceremoniously build something just out of scrap wood that I'd found at a toy factory. A kid I was working with, named Michael Heflin, was working with me one night. We were getting ready to go to the desert. He went out that night on his motorcycle and was killed going 140 miles an hour. We were like a week away from going to Burning Man. But at the cemetery, at the gravesite, Michael's friends said, you know, Michael would have wanted us to go to the desert. So when we went, it became obvious to these kids who were young that it's the first time they'd had death. And as we were working, it became clear that we were making a tribute to a friend.
David Best built this first temple with artist Jack Hay, Michael Heflin's friends, and a slew of random burners who just wandered up to help. Interestingly, David and Jack had named the structure they were to build Temple of Mind, well before Michael Heflin had died. After his death, they decided to make this yet-to-be-built and so-called temple a tribute to him. Even upon arriving to the desert, they had no idea what the Temple of Mind was actually going to look like, and no plan for it to have a reverential atmosphere. But by the end of the event, every part of this temple had been written on with messages, altars had been spontaneously constructed, and new rituals had been created. The temple returned the next year, and it kept returning, each time a new shape and design, each year becoming ever more embedded into the mythology of Burning Man.
When I build the temple, I'm the carpenter. I'm not the priest. So people come and put their own beliefs in it, you know. People that hate God come in and use it. People that love God come in and use it. People that mothers slit their wrists. People that lost their dog, you know. My place is not to judge what people bring or what they're looking for in the temple.
Like all the world's temples, the Burning Man Temple contains a multitude of experiences. But unlike traditional temples, this temple has the capacity to hold all sorts of belief systems and all sorts of activities all of the time. Weddings and breakup ceremonies, celebrations and grief rituals, sunrise meditations and sunset processions. The many expressions of reverence and ritual are here. Sometimes that expression is a sound bath meditation in the center of the temple. Sometimes that expression is one of love and justice.
I had this vision in the temple earlier, and I wrote up on the wall something that's my truth, where I said, I love black people.
Marlon Williams is a racial justice activist.
I love us for being strong, even though we shouldn't always have to be. I love us for being beautiful, even when the world tells us that we're not. I love us for being, for remaining. And then I said, thank you, ancestors.
Sometimes a space that's spiritual but not religious can be radically challenged by something like a Christian Eucharist.
This is the body of Christ broken for you. My hope is that with whatever you have brought to the playa, whatever you've brought to this temple space today, that you would be met and encountered by a life-giving presence of love. However you name God or your higher power or know God at all, pray that you are met with a great mystery that touches you exactly where you need to be touched.
And sometimes you're having your experience backdropped by a full-on orchestral performance by the Playa Pop Symphony in the middle of a dust storm. Still, one of the most common uses of the temple connects to its roots, when David Best and others built a structure to honor their friend and their grief. That's why Harry and Grace Swordlove are here. They read to me the memorial they've placed inside of the temple.
I wrote, my son, my boy, my heart, how much I love you, how very much I miss you, Mama.
His name was Michael, but on the playa he was magic. And he earned that name. Last year was his and his mom's first year here.
When you meet Michael, you immediately got to know him, because he was that type of person, warm and giving and loving and accepting and non-judgmental. He just loved people.
After he graduated last year, he decided he wanted to do more, learn more, so he went off to decide to live in a kibbutz in Israel for 6 months. On March 9th of this year, I'm at home and I get a call from my sister, my mom, who was in a assisted living dementia care unit, had passed away. And so as I'm on the phone with the funeral director, I get a beeping on the phone and I answer it, and it's the U.S. Embassy in Tel Aviv. And they told me that they had found my son. He was out camping with some friends from the kibbutz, and they were dancing all night long at the base of Mount Shlomo. And around 5 a.m., my son had a boundless energy, and he wanted to go see the sunrise. And the sunrise, as it comes up over the Jordan Mountains and onto the Red Sea, it's one of the most beautiful in the world. And everybody else was tired, and they were exhausted. But my son, Magic, he wanted to go. So we went off, and they were half asleep in their tents. The last thing they heard was he was far off in the distance as he screamed at the top of his lungs, "I love you!" And he was just shouting out, whether it was for the echoes, whether it was for his friends, whether it was to God, what was all of the above. And that was the last time anybody saw him. 7 hours later, it took 7 hours later for search and rescue to find him. But, you know, we like to believe. That he did see that sunrise. We came in. We weren't sure if we could make it to the burn this year, but we knew we had to. And we came in, it was Wednesday, and we were delayed and complications. So by the time we got in, it was 5 a.m. And as we drove into the city, the sun was rising. It was a beautiful sunrise. We like to believe that it was our son welcoming us home.
It's been very difficult, but this was his favorite place in the world.
His favorite place in the world. He would have been coming home now, after the 6 months would have been over a couple weeks ago, and he would have been coming home to come to the burn with us.
Was it important to you to...
Bring him here?
Bring him here to the temple?
You have no idea.
No idea.
Very, very much so. For him, as well as for us. And it's part of our closure. It's part of our saying goodbye to our son. It's part of us showing him how much we love him.
Of course, we stand over a funeral plot for our son and we cry, but we don't always feel him there. Mm. It feels empty, like we're standing over a place we shouldn't be. But here in this temple, it doesn't feel empty. It feels alive. And our hope is that as we come here throughout the week, we'll feel him here. And this is a place where we can connect to him more so than some plot of ground and a tombstone that should have never been in the first place. I've been going to Burning Man for 5 years. I've never stayed for the temple burn. And everybody says, you can never stay for the temple burn. I used to say, I'll stay for the temple burn when I have a reason to stay for the temple burn. And now now I have a reason to stay for the temple burn.
The memorial that Harry and Grace leave for Magic will burn, and so will everything that's now a part of the temple. That's because at the very end of Burning Man, the day after the man is burned, there's one final ritual that brings Black Rock City to its conclusion. The temple is lit on fire, and we watch it burn to ash.
As you see in the temple burn, you have nearly 80,000 people gathered together in a circle, you know, with all of their attention focused on this one thing.
Leica Young is a death doula in training.
To me, that's one of the most powerful things about that experience, is being able to see all of those folks together, you know, with a shared intention, watching this thing come apart.
Yeah, it's an amazing space to sit there and just watch that temple begin to burn, and every single person kind of holds with bated breath.
That's Leica's campmate, Dee Morley. Dee is here at Burning Man to memorialize his very close friend, Tim, who died 2 weeks before Burning Man.
Me, after Tim's death, my job was to appropriately memorialize him. One was to do that here in our art community with his family. And then part of the promise I made there was to take their hopes and messages and dreams to the temple.
If the man, the wooden effigy of Burning Man, is its cosmic center, the temple is its heart and soul. The burning of the two structures highlights that stark difference. The burning of the man is fueled by cheer, joy, and wild celebration. The temple by closure and quiet renewal.
We watched it burn. It was beautiful to watch. I definitely watched the spot where we put Tim up and, you know, watched it go up into the sky. I think as it began to burn, I certainly felt a feeling of completeness with my tasks were at the time.
One of my favorite quotes is, "We shape our buildings, thereafter our buildings shape us." And I think that the physical space of the temple every year creates a different environment for people to grieve in and a different kind of experience. The temple this year was kind of like a long hallway, but at night when it was lit up, it looked like two staircases that were moving towards the sky with this kind of open space in between them at the top, you know, leading into the heavens.
The idea that the temple arose as a need for those coming to Burning Man is true but incomplete. The bigger reality is that the temple came to be because it serves a real need in the actual lives of the people who enter it, beyond just Burning Man. Building and burning the temple as a radical grief ritual has actually moved beyond the desert. David Best and the temple crew have built structures around the world for communities stricken by grief. Like Derry, Ireland, where decades of pain and trauma from sectarian violence is still being healed. Or Parkland, Florida, where a 2018 mass shooting at a high school left 17 dead. In these places, the temple was built with the help of the community and burned in their presence. Burning Man is constantly creating rituals, both sacred and profane. The sacred kind perhaps exists in its oldest and most apparent form as the temple. While at times the temple at Burning Man is one of the most solemn places I've ever known, it isn't a sad place. Rather, it's a place quietly rooted in a deep praise and gratitude for life. And its power is that of release, a release that allows that expression of praise and gratitude to continue moving. A release that is realized through our collective role in the temple's birth, its life, and its burn.
That story was told by Jonathan Davis. It's an excerpt from the latest episode of KALW's original podcast, The Intersection at Burning Man, produced by David Boyer. If you want to hear the rest of this episode and find out more about Burning Man's virtual event that's happening right now, go to KALW.org for more information. Today's Cross Currents team includes Precious Green, Marissa Ortega-Welch, B. Saul, Victor Tense, and Eli Wortschafter. Our engineers are James Rollins and Gabe Graben. Production manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.